60 people, right? Anybody have any opinions about the real estate market right now?
It is.
Okay, is it? I like that attitude, that's a great attitude. Anybody else have any ideas about it, reading the newspaper?
We got another guest speaker last week, and he kind of told us the way it was.
Interest rates went down.
Interest rates went down hugely yesterday. You got a 30-year fix for 5 3/8 yesterday. And it could easily get better in the coming days, because why? The Fed dropped the federal funds rate 0.75 yesterday.
Yeah, but the market went up 300 points today.
And this is kind of an amusing thing with to be in the real estate business right now, because locally the phone is really quiet. Nobody's calling. And our friends in Canada are calling and ringing the phone off the hook. Why? Because the loonie, the Canadian dollar, is at parity with the US dollar, even better than parity today. And so they can buy a whole lot of real estate with their money in America. A lot of foreign investment in general in real estate in the United States right now is because of this. But what is your name?
Fernando
is right. That the real estate market is ripe with opportunity, with unprecedented opportunity, that 2 years ago, the last time I did one of these was about 2 years ago. 2 years ago, if somebody said, I want to sell my house, You would try to put somebody on the phone with them to keep them on the phone while you raced over to the house to get them to sign the listing contract, because all they really had to do was go to Safeway. And if they went to Safeway and walked to the back of the store where the dairy products are and whispered, I'm thinking about selling my house, by the time they got home, there would have been 20 people lined up at the door. It was so easy to be a lister 2 years ago, 3 years ago. It was almost impossible to keep a house listed. You'd list it on Thursday and it would be sold by Monday. And in many cases, you would list it on Thursday and you would have a stack of offers that high on Friday. And you're deliberately shining people on and hanging them dry until Monday so you can wring out the best possible offer. It is not like that now. That if you have a listing and you can get it sold at all, you're a miracle worker. Well, this is kind of a bad thing. There are a whole lot of houses out there right now that are 55,000 listings in the MLS right now. There should be around 25,000, 30,000. So we're sitting on about twice as much inventory as we should have. There are a whole lot of houses that have been on the market for more than a year on market and haven't sold. But what it means is that if you can deliver the product, if you have the knowledge, if you have the expertise, all of a sudden people, especially sellers, know they need you, right? 2 years ago, they didn't need us. They knew they didn't need us. And you could sell your house FSBO and get lists just like that. The only reason you'd call a listing agent is in the hopes that he could get you 20,000 more or 50,000 more. Right now, the sellers know they need us. Buyers really don't need the kind of representation that they needed 2 years ago. 2 years ago, we'd end up running 6 or 8 contracts for a buyer before we ever get a house, because the houses were just vanishing just like that. It was a tough time to be a buyer, and they really needed realtors. Well, what's happened in the last year in the world of mortgage financing? The bottom fell out. The subprime market went to hell, but everything went to hell. All day, stated income, no doc, low doc, nothing down, all of those loans are gone, right? And now for a buyer to even qualify for a mortgage is a great big deal. And they have to jump through a lot of hoops. And what does this do for realtors? I mean, this is a really good thing for experienced realtors, because buyers know they need help. And that's the business that we're in. Everybody here is planning to be a real estate licensee, yes? Is that true? That's the business that we're in. We're in the business of selling expertise about real estate at a premium. And the premium is not small. It's a decent income. It's a tough time to make a living in real estate right now if you're not willing and able to go that extra mile, willing and able to do what you have to do to sell the listing, willing and able to do what you have to do to get your buyer jumping through every hoop that they have to jump through to close on the transaction. But if you're willing to provide that kind of service, you've got an excellent career, and believe me, the buyers and sellers know they need you. They know they can't do this process without you. So my name is Greg Swan. As Jim said, I am a broker. We are bloodhoundrealty.com is our brokerage, and you're looking at the entire thing except for the dog right here. Greg Swan, Kathleen Collins, my wife, We are the two realtors for BloodhoundRealty.com. We are a boutique brokerage, and we deliberately have not grown. You incur liability when you grow, and there are other reasons why we haven't added agents. But we built a brokerage in order to build a business for ourselves, something that we can sell someday. And at some point, we will have to add agents, but we haven't yet. So that's why we don't have, we do a whole lot with teenage labor and contractors and things like that. But anything that we can do that we can contract out, we do. Anything that we can do with unlicensed labor, we do. And so far, we haven't had to add any licensees. But it's a family business. My 16-year-old son is our programmer. He's a disaffected Sullivan teenager, but he's an excellent web programmer, so we kind of put up with him. But I have been a broker for, I don't know, since 2005, October 2005?
Yes.
Is when I've been a broker since May of 2005. I've been the designated broker of BloodhoundRealty.com since October of 2005. I have to renew my license in May of this year. I got my license with Jim in May of 2001, so I renewed in 2003, again in 2005, and I will have to renew in 2007 because the law just changed on me. So you guys, once you get your licenses, do you have to renew after two when you're the first time, or it's strictly four no matter what? So you'll have to renew.
How does it work for us that's already in between?
If you're in between, you're gonna have to renew. If you're, if your time is up, like, yeah, if you didn't get a four-year license, then you'll have to renew, and then you will get a four-year license.
Because I renewed mine a year ago January.
Yeah, so you're,
and it went into effect in July, so next January I'll have to renew it.
You're on the bubble, yeah, so you'll have to do it. And then, this is so silly, I had to find this out. Even though it's a four-year renewal, you still have to do the 24 hours every 2 years. And so you have to have documented. So like if you guys license in May of 2008, then you won't renew your license until May of 2012, but you'll have to document that you did 24 renewal hours by May 2010, and then another 24 by May 2012. Which is, I mean, it's really, I thought this was kind of a dumb thing, but Sam Wierczynski is our commissioner, the Arizona Department of Real Estate right now, and he's a really serious, dedicated guy. He's really interested in doing the right thing, and so he was convinced this was the right thing, and we'll just go along with it and say, way to go, Sam. I would have rather had the renewal hours all together with the renewal, but it doesn't work that way. In any case, like I said, it's been 2 years since I've done this. We've done a whole lot differently in the last 2 years, and one of the things that we are as a broker is we're very dynamic. By being this small, we can be very dynamic. We can change as soon as we see opportunity, we can shift our focus. And so 2 years ago, I talked a little bit about the internet. Today, I'm going to talk a lot about the internet. We do a ton on the internet. I should have made you a card just for this purpose. This little slip of paper has our weblogs on it, and we are real big in the real estate weblogging community. The third one down is bloodhoundblog.com, and that is a national industry-focused real estate weblog. So you're gonna, if you go there, you will be reading material produced by agents, lenders, investors all over the country who are real serious experts, really profoundly important people who are giving away really valuable stuff for free. We started this, Kathleen and I started this in June of 2006, and it has grown to become a really major force in the real estate weblogging community, which means that we're a real big fish in a real small pond. But in the long run, there are 1.4 million members of the National Association of Realtors. We see maybe 1,200, 1,600 unique people a day, maybe 250,000 unique people a year. So there's still 1.2 million members of the National Association of Real Estate, National Association of Realtors, who haven't been to bloodhoundblog.com yet. They will be there. This is the future of real estate in general, is the online world. And you will hear, if you listen to the news or if you listen to real estate pundits or whatever, sorry, you're late, you gotta go home. You believe me? If you listen to real estate pundits, you will hear the figure quoted, 80% of all buyers start their searches online. This is a fabulously valuable number. And you'll hear it quoted again and again and again, that where it started that 2 years ago, if you were listening, people would have said, oh, 67% of all buyers, and that was 69%, and then 73, and then 75, 77, 79, or up to 80, soon it'll be 83. 87 is just around the corner. 91, 95, 107, 115% of all buyers start their search online, right? Anybody have a computer at home? And your in-laws come over and they say, can you look up something for me online? And you say, why do I have to look up something for you online? Oh, I tried it and I couldn't get it to work. Kathy's mother has debilitating illnesses. Sweet lady, recovering beautifully, really going through the stuff. God bless her. There was a ton of medical information that Kathy needed to share with her sisters. I said, this is a weblogging problem. This is the perfect solution. Weblogs were designed to solve this kind of problem because it's a way to coordinate people in different locations and share information, and they can communicate with each other, and boom, it's all there online. Anybody can find it. Wherever you happen to be, you can get online and check the information, right? It's a perfect, the problem could not have been better suited for weblogging. So Kathy goes to WordPress.com, sets up a weblog for her mother's medical condition. Two extremely computer literate sisters, right? Neither one of them has managed to make any use of this weblog. But 80% of all buyers start their searches online. And I think this is funny and I am ridiculing it. It is the future. This is the way things are going. And the way that I describe this to realtors is that we are all on the same learning curve for the internet, but we're all at different places. And the fact of the matter is, the survey that the National Association of Realtors hands out that says 80% of all buyers start their searches online, they mailed out 900,000 questionnaires and they got 5% of them back, right? What did the other 95% of people do? We have no way of knowing, but we know that your Uncle Ned cannot buy a book online at Amazon, right? We know that. Uncle Ned has tried several times and then he came over and showed it to you and you can't figure out how he screwed it up anyway, but you ended up having to do it for him. But in the long run, the population of buyers is headed toward the internet. The population of sellers is headed toward the internet. And therefore, as a real estate marketing strategy, y'all need to be focused on the internet as well. And this, some of you are going to say, God, yeah, that's great. That's excellent. What an opportunity. And other people are going to say, oh, Jesus Christ, what am I going to do now? When I got my license in May 2001, I went to work for an apartment locator, which is a horrible job, and I do not recommend it, but it was a lot of experience real fast, and that was what I wanted. I had taken the real estate class thinking that I was going to be an investor, and then I got interested in real estate brokerage as a result of the class, and so I went out and got a job where I could do real estate brokerage, and what I wanted was a lot of experience really fast and quick money. Money that happened right away, because selling residential real estate, you can go for a year and not make anything. So I wanted to make money right away, and I did. I made money in my first week. It wasn't very good money, but I made money in my first week. But the first thing that I did when I got this job was she's showing more. This is life in real estate. She's showing more. She was making phone calls all the way over here. We were looking at listings while we were waiting. She's taking calls from people at houses that she's showing more. The first thing I did when I got this job was set up a website. And it's just the way that my mind runs is that I anticipated that I was going to be able to attract a whole lot of business online, and we did. This site doesn't exist anymore. It was called theapartmentstore.org, and it doesn't exist anymore. But we built bloodhoundrealty.com is a direct result of that site. And when we switched to the Bloodhound marketing model, we were able to switch all that content over. And then we've rebuilt that site several times. We're in the process of rebuilding. BloodhoundRealty.com is the top one on that list that I gave you, and that used to be a static website, and I'm in the process right now of transitioning it to what we call a blog site. So it's a weblog on the main page, and then static pages across on the menu, and this is a real estate marketing. That's what it's for. We're using the weblog to attract people because social media marketing works, that people want information, they want participation, they want communication. And yet at the same time, once they're there, then we can cut them out to the static web pages and try to sell real estate. And so that's literally what it's for. But how many are here? Six weblogs. And this is real life in our business right now. So distinctivephoenix.com is a site devoted to distinctive and historic homes in North Central Phoenix. So we live in North Central, we live in Central and Northern, more or less. There are lots of mid-century modern homes in our immediate neighborhood. Further south, there are some really interesting mid-century modern neighborhoods, and then you get downtown toward Willow or Story, and there are really amazingly interesting historic homes. We do that as a niche. I mean, this is the niche that our business is built around, is servicing these kind of homes, and so we have a site called distinctivephoenix.com that exists to promote historic and architecturally distinctive homes and their upkeep and their maintenance and their decoration, etc., because there are a whole lot of people who are really fascinated by this stuff. And if we can build an audience out of those people, the mantra for 2008 for me is beyond competition. That what we want to do in our marketing is do it in such a way that the people that we're appealing to, the people that we're talking to, would not consider using anyone else as their realtor. That this is the kind of marketing that we want to do, because fighting for buyers and sellers all the time and being in that situation where they're going to interview a half a dozen people and maybe you'll get it and maybe you won't, and they're not even really listening to what you're talking about, that doesn't make sense to us. And so everything that we do is the other way around, is to get people completely committed to us before they even pick up the telephone. And then it happens all the time that we'll show up at a listing and it's ours to turn down. That we can take it if we want it, if we're happy, if we think that it's priced right and it's going to work, but it's ours to turn down, that they're not considering anybody else. We're there first. And so that's what Distinctive Phoenix is all about. I talked to you about bloodhoundblog.com. We have a TV affiliate. We're building, I would call it a TV station, that's kind of ridiculous, but we're headed toward 500,000 channel TV, right? We've talked forever about 500 channel TV, and you've got it if you've got Cox now. You've got 1,000 channels on that Cox box, right? But we're headed toward 500,000 channel TV, that there will be video available for any topic at all. My uncle shoots skeet with 12-gauge shotguns. Not 10-gauge, not 8-gauge, not 20-gauge, 12-gauge shotguns. And there will be a site with a ton of video, more video than he could ever watch, for people who shoot skeet with 12-gauge shotguns. This is the idea of narrowcasting that we saw happen when magazine publishing got cheaper, when cable TV got cheap. That kind of narrowcasting is nothing compared to what we'll see in the future, that you'll be able to slice any demographic that you want and appeal directly to those particular people. And this is another thing that you need to be thinking about in terms of online marketing, because how are you going to get in front of those people? Broadcast media is dead. Interruption marketing is dead. Not to say that it's really dead now, but it's dying. These things are going away. The whole dead tree media, the whole printed media will die in the next 5 years. These things will go away. And the whole idea of having a nationally broadcast commercial except on the Super Bowl won't mean anything at all. But having a commercial that you can target, a commercial or a weblog or some kind of marketing material that you can target to an exact and perfect demographic slice, this is easy to do, and it gets easier all the time. So that's why we have Bloodhound Blog TV, and in fact, this may end up on bloodhoundblog.tv. This is strictly real estate information targeted at professionals. And it's not high-quality video, it's not jazzy, it's not all juiced up, it's not, you know, fabulous graphics and background music and all that, it's not that kind of television. But for the people that we're talking to, it's catnip, because they're dying for this kind of information. They're starving for it all, particularly right now. Realtors are starving, not me, obviously, but realtors are starving all over the country. And so they're dying for information. PhoenixRealEstateTechnologyExchange.com. We're getting a new MLS in Phoenix. Has anybody told you this? Have any of you been able to play on the MLS yet? Yeah? Why, you got realtors in the family?
I do have a mother and a father.
There we go. This is one of the things that you should do now. When do you graduate from this class? In June? So this is one of the things you should be doing now, is finding some realtor to take you into his office and let you play on the MLS, or at least play on the MLS for you, because you're not supposed to touch it if you don't have a license, but go ahead.
They're just changing it or making a new
one? We're getting a new one. We're getting Flex MLS. We have Tempo right now, which really sucks. We've had it since early 2001.
But they've got it where you go in and do the tax roll and everything else, and they've really upgraded that to where you can go in and get everything.
It's new taxes since last January.
It's a new tax system.
The tax system is much better than it ever was. I don't know what's going to happen with that. That's a good question. We're getting Flex MLS. Michael Wurzer, FBS, if you search for FBS systems, you'll find them. but he's part of our world. He's part of the weblogging world, and so we're really excited. There are weblogging realtors all over the country, but Phoenix is an important market in the real estate weblogging world. There are a lot of important real estate webloggers in Phoenix, and because we're getting Flex MLS, we're completely psyched. And so we built this site, PhoenixRealEstateTechnologyExchange.com, which the fast way to get there is to say CredExchange.com, but you can type all that in if you want. Is a weblog devoted to this change, that we're going through this change. There are 30,000 members of ARMLIS, the Arizona Regional Multiple Listing Service. Half of those, at least, 15,000 of them at least, are what we might charitably describe as old-timers. People who are not real comfortable in the computer world in the first place, didn't really like the change to Tempo when it happened in 2001. Were completely happy with the old system, which was all text-based, it was like DOS. They were completely happy with it, or they had a secretary do it and they never had to do it at all, and they never, there are many people, many working realtors who don't do anything with computers at all. And so we anticipated that of these 30,000 people, maybe 29,950 are going to be really not happy about this change, even though it's a big bonus. We're going to get a whole lot. Right now we can do six photos in a listing, six small photos in a listing. When we make the change, we'll have an unlimited number of photos, any size at all. We'll be able to add video to listings. There are all kinds of things that we'll be able to do with this listing system, with the MLS system, that we've never been able to do before. Plus, the people who are building it are listening to us, and therefore we can influence the path, the future path of it. But in any case, that's a good site for you to visit just to see what's going on, and it's a way of getting, making contact with the world of wired realtors at Phoenix, who are, as far as I'm concerned, the future of Phoenix. The last one listed there was realestateweblogging101.com, which is a site that Bloodhound Blog built. That's me and some other people that work with us built it. It's a how-to build your own real estate weblog. And I will tell you that that's the first thing that you want to do, because it isn't, right? The first thing that you want to do, who's working your warm network now? Who has a business in the pipeline now? Yes? How much? It's okay.
Right now, 5 transactions this month.
Wow, are you licensed now?
Yes.
Oh, okay. You had me scared. I think, oh, God, no, I don't know. That's not what I want. That's excellent. That's really great. Why are you taking this class? Just to
keep back to learn principles of real estate.
Good for you. Anybody else? Talking to friends and family? You're going to be licensed in June? All right, that's the idea. You finish this class, you take the test, you get the yellow certificate, you go down to Experian, you take their test. They give you their certificate, you take that down to the ADR, and you pay them their money, and they give you a license. You can now take that license to a broker and hang it, right? You're now, once the broker hangs your license, you can make money. What do you have lined up to make money on? You need, right now, starting today, you need to be talking to people, meeting people, on the telephone with people, friends, family, coworkers, ex-coworkers, ex-husbands, ex-wives, everybody that you know, you need to be talking to and saying, hey, I'm Greg Small. I'm like, you know what? I'm studying real estate. It's the most amazing thing. I never knew there was so much to learn. It's a, this is a great time in the class. Let me ask you a question. You planning on moving soon? Well, not soon. If they said, well, not soon, what did they say? They said, yes. They said, yes, they're planning on moving. Oh, not soon. When are you planning on moving? What were you thinking about, the next 6 months or so? Something like that? Because I'll tell you what, can't help you right now. I don't have a license. But in June, I will. And I need someone. I mean, let's face it, nobody wants to be in that situation. You've never done a transaction. And I need someone that I know that I can depend on, trust. To be there with me. Just to give me that moral strength. You've always been there for me. And I'm so glad that you're planning to move. You know what? Let's go drive around and look at houses right now. I like being a salesperson. I really like it. I really enjoy it. And I don't, I'm not, I'm just playing with you folks. I don't do that to people. But you need to be in contact with your warm network, your sphere of influence. This is the most important source of business that you will have in the first year that you do business, is the people that you already know, your friends, family, coworkers, people that you're already in contact with, the people in your phone book, the people that you have email addresses on, And yes, they're going to say, oh God, no, not another realtor, don't. But the fact is, they need our help. If they're selling, they need our help. If they're buying, they need our help. And you're in this class, you're learning how to help them. At the time that you're learning it, you need to be talking to them, and you need to be talking to them for two reasons. Number one, just because you need to learn how to talk to people and ask for business. This is your job from now on. So you need to do that. But the other thing is, if you go and hang your license in June, you're going to need an income. And the time that it takes to generate business, if you start talking to people then the business that you will generate from talking to them will start rolling in around December at the earliest, if you're really lucky. So if you start talking to them now, it's January. You've got 5 months to work on them before you're able to make any money. Well, somebody's got a need in the next 6 months. You know, most of the people you talk to will not have any need at all, or if they do, it'll be far out in the future. But some people have a need in the next 6 months, and if you're ready for them so that you're licensed in June, and on June 15th you're out looking, July 1st you write a contract, August 1st is when you get to close of escrow, that's when you get paid, that's only 2 months that you went without income. 2 months is a long time without income, especially, you know, you're starting from scratch. If you have some money piled up, which is a good idea also, then you've got the cushion to live without income. But if you're starting to build up, that's why I asked, the word is pipeline. You put people in your pipeline, that you're talking to people all the time, and somebody is moving now and there's nothing you can do about it, except maybe you can possibly help somebody that you already know in the real estate business. They're moving now, there's nothing you can do about it. Other people are moving in 6 months, 9 months, 12 months, a year, 2 years, 3 years. All of these people you have relationships with, and you sustain those relationships through time so that 3 years from now they're not talking to some other realtor. You knew today that they were planning on making a move in the next 3 years. And 3 years might turn into five, but it could easily turn into 18 months. And that's why you need to maintain the relationship, because you don't know for sure when the need is really going to arise. You only have kind of a rough estimate. But if you're not in contact with those people when the need does come up, then they're going to call somebody else. And that's a transaction that you could have done. It was already yours, and you lost it anyway.
Are you strictly in marketing for real estate? Or?
I'm a realtor. I show, I list, I build websites. We build custom websites for every house we do. We build a custom sign for every house we do. You got this card.
I think she came in a little late. He owns his own brokerage.
I'm a broker. I'm a real estate broker. This is a little invitation card for open houses. So when we list a house, we'll do 1,000, 2,000, 5,000 of these door to door to get people. That's what I was saying, is that on the listing side particularly, they know they need us, but you got to deliver.
Are you only in the state of Arizona?
Yeah. It's rare to find realtors who are cross-licensed. It can happen, especially if somebody's working. Like, yeah, we know people in Cayman, for instance, and some of them are cross-licensed into Nevada, because even though it's a 45-minute drive, for them it's a short trip. But if you're someplace like that, if you're near a state border, or if you're doing multi-state work, like I knew, I did a house with a lady who was working in California and working here.
That's what I'm California.
I also do Tucson. Yeah. That's a totally separate one. That's
totally different.
That's something that I wish somebody would have told me, where you have to sign up here and then you have to sign up in Tucson.
And that's one of the things that's happening. In California, it's probably going to happen in the next couple of years. There are 9 MLSs in California, and they're going to consolidate it, which is a good thing for the realtors and a bad thing for the MLS vendors, yeah. Right? Because before they had 9 customers, now they only have 1.
How much would you say you invest in each listing?
We take a $1,500 retainer, and I don't advise you to do this either, but this is something that we do. We take a $1,500 non-refundable retainer on the way in, and we spend all of that, but we spend more than that. We spend probably around $2,500, maybe $3,000, not counting the labor, per listing. We take the retainer to make it difficult to quit, frankly. We're going to spend a ton of money. And the only way that we're really going to recoup that investment is if the house sells. And so we don't want the seller flaking out on us. So we started taking a retainer a couple of years ago. We used to do it the way realtors normally do it is they take a listing, and they don't take any money up front. But the fact is they don't spend anything either, not to speak of. that a normal listing consists of a lockbox.
Sign.
A lockbox and a sign and basically kind of listing in the MLS and that's it. And we do a ton more than that. We do a lot more than that. And it's costly. And the fact that it's costly doesn't matter because we're representing $500,000 homes. So, you know, if we take a typical commission on a $500,000 home, we're going to make really decent money on the back end, but it has to sell. And so we take a $1,500 retainer to cover some of those upfront costs and to make it harder for sellers to back out of us. It doesn't mean that they don't, it happens. But our goal is to hit home runs. We market by hitting home runs. I mean, all this internet stuff that I've been talking about, everything else that we do is all in support of the idea of hitting the ball out of the park. And that's, as far as I'm concerned, that's our job. We want to list and sell in 5 days. I want my sold sign to go up on the fifth day. We don't hit that target every time, but what are we, 31 days on market on average? We're in this market where everybody is 90 days or more, we're 31 days on market on average. And we do get a lot of them up in the fourth or fifth day, we get the sold sign up. I want to hit home runs. That's all I want to do because that's the way that I attract sellers.
But you have an assistant doing inputting all that information.
No. It's us for now. For now, we're gonna farm it out to Bangalore. By the way, when we start using unlicensed assistants, I mean we did use teenagers to do a lot of scout work now. But when we start using unlicensed assistants in a big way, we're gonna farm it out to India. It's doable. Yeah, in the internet world, it's doable. We're gonna farm it out to Bangalore and pay less and get better spelling. So. The largest population of English speakers on earth in India. Of countries where English is commonly spoken, India has more English speakers than any other nation, or way more than America. China's going to beat India soon. It's an English-speaking world, and we're not the best at it. We're really good at many things, but we're not the best at speaking and writing English. So in any case, I just wanted to go through all of that stuff. This is all called social media marketing is what I've been talking about. And it is the future. Anybody go to Facebook, MySpace, LinkedIn? No? Facebook, no?
Okay, yeah, we all
are. You're all at MySpace. MySpace is social media marketing. It's a way of creating little tiny little networks of, and there you go. You're on MySpace, you have a warm network already. I don't care about your family or friends. These people matter too. The people you know in MeetSpace matter. But online, you have a warm network of people your age who are approaching the age where they're going to buy homes. And young people buy homes, and they buy more often, that they will turn over every 3 to 5 years, whereas you get to be my age, that's maybe every 10 years, a little bit older. Gotcha, how old are you? Jim and I are the same age, practically speaking. I don't even know. People in their 50s and 60s may not move for 20 years. So people your age, you're getting them when they're ripe. You're getting them when they're, and this is where you start having those conversations. Look at me. This is where you start having those conversations. And you say, you know what? Fun is fun, but your credit really matters. Have you looked at your credit rating lately? Have you done anything about that? Because you know what? 620 doesn't cut it anymore. It's like 640 to get a conforming loan, and even then the interest rate is going to be outrageous. Let's knock that up to 720 and we'll get you a great loan.
680 and then we'll talk.
In any case, this is all about social media marketing. This is the future, and I don't want to waste too much time on it because what I was talking about before was more important. Prospecting among people that you already know, the people that you're working with. If you can have conversations with strangers, so much the better. But for the most part, strangers aren't going to know you, they're not going to trust you, and they're not going to talk to you. If a stranger has a real estate need, what are they going to do? They're going to go find somebody that they know and trust. They're either going to go online and find somebody like me, they're going to turn on KTAR, and they're going to hear Russell Shaw on the radio. Russell writes with us at bloodhoundblog.com. They're going to hear Russell Shaw on the radio, and they're going to call him. You don't have much chance to engage with strangers until you get your license, but your friends and family, people who already know you, you should be talking to them now because they do have real estate needs. And it's tough to talk to them, it's tough to do this, but you need to practice anyway. And the worst thing would be to have your license for a couple of months and have somebody tell you, oh, we're having a housewarming next week. Housewarming, what is that? Oh, we just moved, didn't we tell you? What, or didn't you tell, why didn't I know and why didn't I ask you? why didn't I know that you were planning to move, and why wasn't I there to help you find that house? This happened to me.
How about using weblogs to cultivate relationships?
And there's that too, using weblogs to or using MySpace or using Facebook or using whatever access you have to people, and there's a fine line between helping people achieve their dreams and being an annoying salesperson. And everybody has to find that line. But there is a point at which that you are being helpful. Even though it's good for me, it's also good for you. If we're talking about your credit score and what you can do to improve it, do not pay down those trade lines. Do not close those trade lines. Pay down your debts, but do not close those trade lines. If you're sitting on a charge-off, you got a five-year-old charge-off, do not pay it off. Go and talk to the person who's got the charge-off on you and say, I will pay this off if you will make the charge-off go away completely. Because if you have an antique charge-off on your credit and you pay it off now, you just renewed it. Where it was 5 years old before and the people looking at your credit score were ignored it because they saw, oh, that's a five-year-old problem, no big deal. Suddenly you just renewed it. It's a brand new charge off on your credit. Make it go away. Make them pull it out.
Not a guess.
Okay. So and I'm not here to talk
7 years from the debts incurred.
I'm not here to talk about credit. What I'm here to talk about is helping people achieve their dreams as opposed to twisting their arms to get them to do real estate transactions. And this is all doable. Jim, are you looking at me like I'm running out of time?
No. I would just want to reflect on that credit thing. It really never goes away, people. But they don't look at it past a certain time. It's always there.
Right.
And it's on, and they're gonna have visual sight for 10, and they count it for 7. I love to have it go away. I mean,
this is
nine ankle biters. Otherwise, my credit is perfect.
This is an excellent little niche in real estate right now because it's so difficult to qualify for loans. Helping people improve their credit scores, and it's not something that you can achieve instantaneously despite the crap that you get in your mail or in your spam. Improve your credit score overnight, that can't be done. But you can work with people over the course of 3-6 months to make a significant difference to get them from 620 to 640 or 680 so that they can get a conforming loan, and now you've built a relationship. Now you have somebody that you're dealing with on a regular basis, and who are they going to turn to? When they're ready to go out and buy that house, who are they going to do it with? And
the woman who...
What it boils down to, what Kathy was talking about, building relationships through weblogging, the real deal is building relationships, period. However you do it, you need to be doing it, and you need to be doing it now because you need to hit the ground running. You need to have prospects in your pipeline when you're ready to make money. When you're able to make money, because some of them won't come through anyway. Some of them will fall apart. A lot of them will fall apart, especially early on. And so the more people that you're working with now, the more people you will have to work with when you're licensed. Yes, ma'am.
Can I just add on that? The lady who I'm taking out to look at houses this week, we started talking about looking in June, and she had some credit problems. And so she started, introduced her to some people who helped her, and they've been working with her, and she's been working on correcting the credit problems. Well, she's ready right now. The interest rates just went down. She can qualify for a whole lot more house than she could have.
And houses are substantially cheaper now than they were last
year. So where she was looking at squeezing into a teeny little condo in the summer based on what she had, by fixing her credit, working with these people over the past 6 months, and with what's happening in the mortgage market, we're looking at wonderful houses in Tempe tomorrow. But it's a relationship I've been working on since June or July.
And she would not go, this particular buyer. I mean, it's not always like this, but this particular buyer would not go anywhere else. We call it glued on. This buyer is completely glued on to Kathy. There's no way that Kathy could blow this. I mean, she could screw it up. But if Kathy doesn't do anything to screw it up, then it's hers. It's just a matter of working and waiting. But it's a lot of waiting. And Kathy thought she was done last summer. And that house fell apart. And we've had to wait all this time since then for this particular deal to come through. Go ahead.
It's patience. Remember I talked about patience? Mm-hmm. Patience, developing and clientele in your business.
And just working with people the way that they're ready to work. And sometimes it seems like everything's going to pop just like that, and it doesn't. And other times that you will have the idea that nothing is going to happen for 9 months and suddenly it's all over by next week. And you've got to be ready for either circumstance because they, in general, I mean, the ideal situation is to be like an attorney or a doctor, a surgeon with your clients. But that's not always the case. And in many cases, they kind of sort of treat you like a service station attendant or a valet or a chauffeur. For real. And one of the things that you'll do as you gain experience, as you get better at it, is professionalize what you're doing to get them to understand that you are like an attorney or a surgeon, that you are an important member of their financial advisory team and not a chauffeur, not a lackey, not someone to carry the bags and bring in the groceries or whatever. But the fact of the matter is people will call you at all hours, they will call you on Christmas. No one would ever think of calling their attorney on Christmas, but people will call a realtor, no problem at all. You can count on the 4th of July, you won't hear from anybody. Half the day on Mother's Day, because everybody takes mom out for breakfast. But that's it. These are your days off, and the rest of the time you work. And it's really, it is a lot of work. I work from 6 to midnight every day, 7 days a week. It's a lot of work. And God help us, someday it'll be a lot of money. But it has been really good money in the past, and it's okay money now. We're not starving, but it could be better. And in the long run, it's going to have to get better. It's going to have to get a lot better, but it's not great. All right, so complete the class in June. You take Jim's test. You get 100%. God bless you. Thank you for studying. That was great. So you go take the test of Experian. Go take it right away. Do not put it off. Right? You're pounding your head full of crap right now. You're studying for the test. I mean, this is a better way to study than the Yellow Pages School of Real Estate because all they teach you is the test. They don't teach you the principles of real estate. You will learn the principles of real estate from Jim, from Jacobus. This is good stuff. I know. I've been through it. I've been through both because I do my renewal hours over at 43rd and Dunlap, and it's a total waste of time, except I have to do it. Take his test. Immediately go take the test of Experian. Don't put it off because you'll forget. And then you'll fail, and you'll have to go back and take it again. You take the test of Experian. You pass. I think a passing grade is like 70%. It's amazing. It's a dumb test anyway. And I can't imagine, there are people,
75%.
Tom Hopkins took the test in California in the 50s when it was much easier and failed 5 times, passed on his 6th time, right? This guy's a multi-billionaire, he lives in Paradise Valley. He's incredibly wealthy. I have no idea how anybody fails this test. I didn't bring it today, but I used to bring in a math problem that was on the test when I took it, and it was, 320 plus 320 is how much?
640.
That was the math problem. You're doing all these incredible math problems and do them. And Jim is going to give you little handouts for the final full of really incredible arcane real estate math problems and do them. Learn how to do it. And then you're going to take the test and they're going to say, what's 320 plus 320? 640. It's a square mile. 640 acres. But anyway, take the test. Take Jim's test. Take the Experian test. Go downtown, 20 or 40th Street and Thomas is where the ADRD is. 44th or 40th?
44th.
44th and Thomas. Get the license. You take that license, and now you're going to go interview a broker, right? Because a salesperson cannot lawfully do business in the state of Arizona without parking your license with a broker. So has anybody talked to brokers yet? Yeah? There we go. But just because you have them in the family, that's not fair. Have you talked to more than one broker?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, there we go. So you're shopping. This is smart. This is something you can be doing right now. And just make appointments with brokers and tell them. I'm not going to be licensed until June, but I just want to get a feel for things and figure out how things are. Right? Do you know how you get paid in real estate? Does anybody know? What? When you sell a house? Go ahead. You can talk. I mean, you can enunciate it.
Yeah.
If I shoot you down, it doesn't matter. You sell a house. No. You sell a house. The title company, when you're finally done with the process, the title company has a great big fat check, commission check, 3% on the sale of a $300,000 home, $9,000 check written out by the title company. Who's it written out to? Your broker, not to you. Your broker gets paid. You don't get paid. You don't get paid by anybody but your broker. When I was doing apartments, somebody offered me a tip, but I thought it was so funny. He's like, oh, God, no. This guy said, oh, you were great. Here's the, you know, he's going to give me like $20 for helping. I can't touch your money. As a licensee, as a salesperson, you cannot touch any money that does not emerge from your broker's pocket.
You were doing apartments?
I was doing apartments, yeah.
It's not only dwelling, it's like rehab apartment building. So should I be talking to a broker in the apartment?
I would advise you not to get a license. I mean, learn everything you can about...
I'm here because I want to learn.
Learn everything you can about real estate, but if you get the license, you incur liability. So the judge will say that you're held to a higher legal standard because you could have and should have known.
I should just be a corporation, a development company.
And that's a good idea also, is to be a limited liability corporation to keep the money out of it. Yeah.
Credit away from the whole situation.
We'll talk later.
And, yeah, have an unlisted phone number and a post office box so your investors can't, find you. So anyway, your broker gets that $9,000 check. What does he do with it?
He takes his cut.
It's called a split. And most of you, when you go to park your licenses, you're going to work in a split shop. And the split shop means that the broker is going to take some percentage of your check. It really is your check. You earned it. You did all the work. The broker is going to take some percentage. How much is it going to take? Depends on where you go. Could be 50. I never heard of that. I suppose it could be. It depends on what you're getting. The reason that you want to talk to brokers is you want to find out what the split is and you want to find out what you're going to get for it. Right. So when you're new, I'm convinced that the real estate broker laws exist so that brokers can milk agents. And I think that this is the real profit in real estate, period, is brokers milking agents. That the agents, some of the agents make money, and some of the agents make a lot of money, but 85% of all agents do not renew their licenses. Actually, it's like 90 plus percent, but lately it's not been that high because we just went through this incredible boom. But it's an enormous percentage. 80, 85, 90% of agents, new first-time licensees, do not renew their licenses. This is an incredible failure rate. In podiatry, if they had this kind of failure rate, they would completely revise the curriculum. They would start teaching podiatry completely differently because there's no excuse for that kind of failure rate. It's baked in the cake. It's always been that way in real estate. And I think that the real business in real estate is brokers milking new licensees, putting stars in their eyes about all the millions of dollars that they're going to make and all the Bentleys that they're going to have in the driveway, and get people to come in and agree to a 50% split. So somebody told me that a broker once said everybody's got at least three transactions in them. Everybody has at least three transactions in them. That means the broker says 300,000 divided, 9,000 divided by two is 4,500 times three is $13,500 is what you're worth to me. And as soon as you don't have another transaction in the pipeline, see you later, sister. Don't let this happen to you. How many of these have I done?
How many what?
These classes? Six, eight?
A dozen or so.
Yeah, a dozen, a lot. Craig Frunix, remember him?
Yeah.
We sat
in the back of the class and held up the wall. He's an A student, by the way.
We met him the other day at a technology forum for Armless, but he's on the Phoenix Real Estate Technology Exchange. Of Jim's students, I've talked to hundreds of Jim's students over the years. Craig Frunix and, forget his name, he was in my class, Richard Pomasel.
Oh yeah.
These are the two that I know of the hundreds that I've talked to who are still working besides me and Kathleen. So four people that I know out of hundreds of students that I talked to are still working over the years. Go ahead.
You have to work with a broker before you can become a broker?
You have to be a licensed salesperson for 3 years.
Minimum.
A minimum of 3 years before you can take the broker's test, which is another 90 hours of classroom. And another test, I think it's the same test with one additional question. One broker question. I didn't see any difference when I took the test other than that one question. But you have to be a salesperson for 3 years, and then you have to get your brokers to sign off on you.
Done work in those 3 years.
You have to be actually working. And so if you're licensed and you parked your license with a 100% shop, like this, we'll talk about this in a minute. There's a difference between a split shop and a 100% shop. But you can park your license with Prestige Realty at Metro Center for $25 a month. They'll park your license. And now you can do business. You can go out, buy, sell, represent other people, do anything that a licensee can do. They'll take E&O insurance, errors and omissions insurance, and a $250 premium when you bring in a check, and the rest of it's yours. So you come in with that $9,000 check, you're spending $25 a month always. Whether you do any business or not, it's always $25 a month. But you bring in that $9,000 check, and what you get back is 87, I can't even do the math, 87, 89,750. All but $250. That's 100% shop. It's a completely different way of doing things. You get nothing from the broker, or nothing that you don't pay for by a separate fee. And so, like, HomeSmart is 100% shop. And you go there, and they immediately start selling you business cards and letterheads and shit like that. It's how they make their money off of you. And I think this is insane, but you've got to have business cards, and so you can do it yourself, or you can have them do it. If you're licensed with them, you have to buy their business cards, and that's how they make their money off of you. At Prestige Realty, all they do is hang licenses. I had my license there for a while because it was a great brokerage for me. We were making our own rain anyway, so we just wanted the money. I didn't need leads. I didn't need training. All I wanted was the money. Almost nobody works there. They have 185 licenses there, and maybe 15 people work. And the other 170 people are just paying that monthly fee in case they have a mother-in-law transaction. The mother-in-law says, oh, I'm ready to move to Florida. And so you list and sell that house, and so one transaction every 3 years or something like that, and the rest of the time they're just parking the license for $25 a month. That's a doable proposition. You can do that. But you got to make your own rain, or you got to be doing something else. And that's another thing. There are, out of the 30,000 members of Armless, how many of them are really working? I don't know. But there are a significant number of people who have real estate licenses, are members of the National Association of Realtors, are members of ARMLIS, the Arizona Regional Multiple Listing Service. They have everything they need to work, and they also have a full-time job teaching high school, or selling life insurance, or they're just doing something else. The cost of maintaining the license is so low relative to the value of that $9,000 check every 3 years that they just hang on to the license anyway. But this has nothing to do with you because you don't have a ton of business in the pipeline and you don't have any way of making your own rain. And so now you're going to be talking to Century 21 Metro, for instance, which is a shop that's going to take 50% off the first 10 deals. The first 10 houses that you sell, the hardest 10 that you will ever sell in your life, and they're going to take 50% on the split. Why are they taking that? Because they claim, and this is what you have to verify, but they claim that they're giving you leads. They're putting you in front of people who will buy and sell houses, and they claim that they're providing you with training. And the reason that you need to interview brokers is find out what deal you're going to get. You're going to make some kind of compromise. You're going to give up some of your money. What are you going to get in exchange? Go ahead.
So like for 3 years, like, you know, if you didn't sell a house, that doesn't really matter, you know, as long as you stick it out for 3 years. You
can... No, that was why I was talking about that, because you really do have to work. You need your brokers to sign off on a form that says, what's your name?
Paula.
This is Paula, was working for these 3 years, and if your broker says, no, I won't sign that. You know, you've been here. I mean, I know you can fog a mirror, you got a pulse. I've seen you around once a month to bring in your $25 check, but I have not seen you sell a single house. No way am I gonna sign this form. Then you've got another 3 years with another broker before you can get that broker's license. And that is, I mean, and the other part of this is, if you burn a lot of bridges, I'm not a real friendly guy. I'm not a nice guy. She's wonderfully nice. She's amazing. She's the sweetest person on earth. I'm not nice. I can make enemies, believe it or not. And if I decide to run roughshod over the broker community in Phoenix, then they can make a lot of trouble for me. Not so much now because I'm a designated broker, but before I got the broker's license, my broker could have said, hell with you. Get lost. Not only am I not signing this, I'm severing you. I'm sending your license back to the department, which can happen again, right? You need that broker. You have to have your license parked with a broker in order to work, in order to do anything that requires a license.
You have to be parked with the same broker for 3 years?
Any
days.
Broker.
So if you any move designated around, broker. Right.
What?
So if you move around?
You could move once a month, but you're going to have a hard time finding those guys and getting them to sign your form if you got 36 guys that you need to sign for you. They need to know you. But yeah, it's got to be somewhere. But the deal is.
But they all have to sign.
Every broker that you worked with in the last 3 years has to sign. It could be, you could be working for 9 years, but it's only the last 3 years that have to sign. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Every broker that you worked for,
yeah, that your license was with.
Wow.
Yeah, so I had Jack. I had three because I had two at Prestige. They swapped a designated broker, so I had two at Prestige who had to sign for me, plus Jack English.
So if you wait 4 years, it's still just 3 years?
The three most recent years, those brokers have to sign. If they're alive, and obviously if they're not alive, then it's what, I don't know what the succession process is, but there's going to be one, because we acknowledge that people do die. But here, this is the other end of it, is that you cannot work if your license is not with a broker. So, all right, you went out and got six listings. God bless you, that was hard work. That was a lot of talking, a lot of jawbone. And not only that, you did a whole lot of work for these sellers to launch them appropriately into the marketplace so that those houses will sell. And then one day you show up at the office and somebody has smashed your rearview mirror and you're really upset about it and there's nobody there except the broker and you blow up with the broker and he says, you know what? I just don't need this shit. You know, I think you're a sweet lady most of the time, but I can see that there's something about you that's just not what we want around here. And I always have to be thinking about liability. And if you blow up at a customer like that, I could end up in a lawsuit. You know what? It's been great, it's been fun, but I'm sending your license back. That's all the broker has to do to sever you is send your license back to the department, right? You can't work, right? You have six listings. You cannot call any of those parties. They're not your clients, they're your broker's clients. The employment agreement is with the broker. You cannot talk to those people because you can't do anything that requires a real estate license. What you need to do right now is go find a broker who will park your license so that you can at least talk to new prospects, but you can't talk to those old prospects at all. What happens to your money when those houses sell? Read the fine print on your employment agreement on the way in, because the only time it's gonna matter is on the way out. And it may well be that the broker keeps 100% of those commissions because your license is no longer there. And you need to read, you need to find out what your deal is. I think this sucks. I really do think it sucks. I think we should have one level of licensing. It's this way in Colorado and Oregon. Everybody works at the broker level of licensing. There is no distinction between salespeople and broker. Anybody can fly their own flag. You can be a self-employed broker. All you have to do is go down and fill out the paperwork, and you're a self-employed broker. The ideal situation in a state like Arizona, where we have lots of really big brokerages like REMAX or Realty Executives or John Hall or whatever, would be to have Jim Sexton is the designated broker at John Hall. And the ideal situation would be for Jim Sexton to be the manager of brokers at John Hall. Just a manager like a normal business and have everybody there, their own independent contractor, their own licensee, their own filling out their own employment contracts so that the contracts move with you. So if you decide that Jim Sexton is not for you, that he's too risky, and you're worried about your liability and you want to move your license over to John Foles at Realty Executives or Greg Swan at BloodhoundRealty.com, you can move just like that and take all your contracts with you. That would be the ideal situation. It's not the way it is, and because it's not, you need to be aware of the power of the broker, of the financial considerations that the broker is going to be looking for from you, and what you're going to get in return. Because you're going to give up some of your money, and it's the question is, what are you going to get back? Go ahead.
So like you said, in Colorado, somewhere there, like, you know, you can, like, it's all one level and stuff. You start off at a real estate broker.
Everybody's a broker.
Like, can you go in there and, like, pass a test and certify as a Colorado real estate agent? Then when you come to Arizona, you just register? Or
they probably won't let you. I don't know. There are laws for cross-licensing, and they vary from state to state. But they probably wouldn't let you be a broker in Arizona without going through the 3 years. They might let you take... The way that it works for cross-licensing is the test that you're going to take for the license is half state and half national. And normally for licensing across state lines, what they want you to do is to take the state portion and pass it. That they will assume that you've already passed the national portion and it's not a problem. And so that at that point, they may also expect you to take whatever, like 45 hours of training for the state level of the test before you can take it also.
Yeah, but if you are like a real estate broker in Colorado, like do you, if you pass a state exam and stuff when you come here, and do you automatically become a
I'd be amazed if they did that. I don't know, but I'd be surprised if they did, just because they're going to require you to comply with Arizona law for something like that. And if you don't have 3 years with some broker, I can't imagine that they would honor that. The final part of what I want to talk about, and we've been kind of talking about this all the way along anyway, is that I think this is the right way to study real estate. I did this with Jim, and I just kind of locked into it. I was going to Phoenix College anyway for other stuff, and I wanted to find out about real estate, so I signed up for real estate class, and I just kind of locked into it. But the Yellow Pages School of Real Estate, you can qualify for the test in 10 days. 9 hours a day, 3 classes a day, 3 3-hour classes a day, 9 days in a row, And then you can get, you take the test and get the cert, go down and take the state test and get your license. You can be done with the whole process in less than 2 weeks.
So why do I think it was glad?
Because you want to learn about real estate.
Oh, my God.
You want to learn the principles and fundamentals of real estate because that's what you won't learn in that kind of class. All you will learn in that class is how to pass the test. And they will stand, and this is so funny, you'll see it when you take your renewal hours, they will stand in front of the class and say, now, I would never think of giving away the answer to a test, but if somebody has a pencil handy, they might want to write down 640 acres to a square mile. And rods and chains and all that crap, all the stuff that you have to learn to pass the test that you will never use. What you're going to learn in this class is the stuff that you need to know to actually practice real estate. And that's why this is the right way to do it, in my opinion. You've already done it. Did you guys have Jim for 179 or do you have somebody else? So
what,
you're used to
what was everybody having? I think about six people were having.
You're used to the presentations, you're used to the tests, you're used to the reading, all that stuff. If you did the Yellow Pages School of Real Estate, what you would have is 90 hours, period. 90 hours in the classroom, nothing outside of class, no homework, no presentations. The presentation's fun, you enjoying that stuff?
We'll find out tonight, it's the first one.
I think this is one of the best gifts that Jim gives you. What is your job going to be? If you're going to do real estate, what is your job going to be?
Talking.
More than anything else, talking. And having the opportunity to talk to a room full of friendly people, people who are not, she brought cookies, she was smart, people who are not hostile to you, who are not guarded against you, who are not convinced that you're trying to trick them or steal something from them or something like that, which does happen when you're trying to talk to people about buying and selling real estate. You're talking in front of a friendly crowd, it gives you an opportunity to speak. One of the things that I think that y'all should do is go to Toastmasters. There's a Toastmasters club everywhere. You can go to a Toastmasters meeting any day of the week. In Phoenix, any day of the week, there are going to be five different Toastmasters meetings. It's like AA. You can find one no matter what. You can always find a Toastmasters meeting. But find the Toastmasters club in your neighborhood. Toastmasters is public speaking. It's learning how to speak in public, how to manage a meeting, how to speak extemporaneously, so that someone says, Jim Lake, we had a speaker prepared for today and he wasn't able to make it, but I know you always have a pocket speech in your head, so come up here and tell us something interesting, and boom, you're ready to do it. You can stand up there and do it. I have notes, and I bring notes, and sometimes I look at them and sometimes I don't.
You have more pages of them.
No, this is the same outline I've been using for years. I revised it today to update it to reflect the internet, but I speak for a living. I talk to people all the time. I don't know that I'm necessarily great at it, but I'm okay. And I can do it whenever I need to, and I'm never afraid. I'm never nervous that somewhere somebody's got some kind of study that says people fear public speaking more than death. They would rather die than talk to strangers. You're going into a business. You're afraid of talking to strangers? You will.
I'll talk to strangers.
You will. And frankly, having the confidence to talk to strangers is more valuable anyway. And go ahead.
So if I'm planning to get my license solely for my own personal use, do I would still have to go to a broker to hang my license?
It depends. If you want to get paid.
No. If I just want it for my own transactions, like if I can find a house in the future.
Why do you need a license? You could buy a house now.
So I don't have to use a real estate agent if I want to go and buy.
You don't need to use a real estate agent now. You can do it now. You could sell, certainly, without an agent, but you can buy without an agent also. There are two ways, frankly. One is dual agency, which I hate, and I think you guys have passed Chapter 22, so I'll not volunteer to talk about it. But I hate dual agency, so I'm always eager to talk about agency. But one is to let the listing agent handle both sides, whether or not the lister represents you. And the other way, and this is getting more and more common, is to say to the listing agent, you know what? I love it. I want to buy it. I know you got a 3% co-broke in here. I can't take that 3% co-broke because my license isn't parked with a broker, so I can't get paid. But guess what? I want you to lock 3% off this price. So, you know, you got it listed at 150. I'm going to offer you 130 anyway, but after that 130, we're going to take another 3% off because you're not paying a buyer's agent. And I'm representing myself and I can take care of myself. You can't pay me, but I'm not going to pay you to not represent me. And this is called negotiation. And you don't need a license for that either. My advice, again, same as with her. If you don't intend to take money for for handling real estate transactions and especially for representing people in real estate transactions, my advice would be get all the education you can get and do not get the license. Because the license just increases your liability. That you're not getting anything in exchange for the license. And so, yeah, get all the education you can, and there's way more than you can get out of this class. If you go to bloodhoundblog.com, you will find amazing investors out there, investors who do incredible deals. And they can introduce you to even larger networks, strictly of real estate investors, people all over the country, all over the world, who are doing really incredible things. But if you don't have a reason to have a license, my advice would be don't get it. Because all you're doing is telling the judge that you are better informed than the people you're dealing with. And they will hold that against you. You know that you have to disclose. Right, when you sell, if you have a license, your license is parked. If you're a state licensee, whether or not your license is parked, and you're selling your own property, you have to disclose that you're a licensee. You know this, right? This is required by law. Why do you have to disclose it?
Because you're licensed.
The presumption is you know more than the other party. The presumption is you have an advantage over the other party, and so you disclose it in order to put them on notice that you are a better informed party than they are. They need to be on their guard. And this is what, by going through everything necessary to get the license except getting the license, you don't have to disclose that you have a license. And that, as far as I'm concerned, if you're just doing investment work, buying and selling for your own portfolio, you're probably better off without it. The counter argument would be, get the license, park it with a broker, don't bother to join the NAR. You can if you want to, but you don't need to. Well, I guess you do, because the promise of compensation requires armless membership. But that would be the counter argument, would be to go the whole nine yards and get everything so that you can take the commission. And this is the way that we bought our house, is we bought our house with 5% down, 3% of which was the buyer broker commission. I just pumped the buyer broker commission over to the down payment side of the transaction. And that way you don't have to fight for that 3%, it's there anyway. And in a case like that, I would say go with 100% shot, because you don't need anything from your broker anyway, you just need to stay the hell out of your way. Which I think is the ideal situation.
Thank you.
You have a huge disadvantage going into the real estate business. And I want to tell you that the real estate market, I told you at the start, it's ripe with opportunity, but that opportunity requires expertise, and this is what you don't have. Expertise and experience, you don't have it, I'm sorry. He does. The rest of you are going to be green. And people are going to say, well, why should I do business with you? Why don't I go with somebody who's got more experience? Do you have an answer for that question?
I would work 10 times harder for you than anybody else. Say that louder
with pride. This is exactly the right answer.
Because I'm new and I'm green and I'm going to work 10 times harder for you than anybody else.
Damn straight, I'm brand new. You are exactly right.
I was a real estate agent in my past life.
Think about that. I just got out of real estate classes. Things change. And I am up to date on everything, I admit, in theory. I'm up to date on everything in theory. And we know from being newlyweds that there's a difference between theory and practice. But the other thing that we know about being a newlywed is that newlyweds are exuberant. They put more into it. They try harder. I'm young, I'm green, I don't have a lot of clients, but what that means is I have an enormous amount of time to spend on your problem. You won't get the kind of attention from a Russell Shaw that you can get from me. He does 400 transactions a year. He has a ton of experience. I can't compete with that. But you will not get that kind of attention from him because he's just too busy. Every objection that anyone can name has an appropriate response, but you've got to be ready for it. You've got to be ready for it before they hit you. And this is the one that's going to hit you. Until you have done 3, 5, 10 transactions, you're going to hear it again and again and again. And that's a good reason for talking to agents, talking to brokers, listening to war stories, grabbing onto whatever experience you can get from other people so that you have a store of experience in your head, at least, even if you haven't lived through it personally, you know what other people have lived through, so that you have some answers, some things that you can deal with. But this is the countervailing factor for your lack of experience is your possession of an enormous amount of exuberance. And if you can do that kind of trade-off, especially with buyers don't care about realtors anyway, they care about houses, right? So if you got the houses for them, they're gonna love you. If you take them to the house of their dreams, they're going to love you forever. and they won't care that you lack experience. With sellers, it's going to make a big difference, but you're not going to be listing that much at the start anyway. Or if you are, God help you, God bless you, that's great. But what she said is exactly right. That yes, I do lack experience, but there's an upside to this. There's an upside to everything. So let's talk about the advantages of dealing with someone who's brand new. Go ahead.
I know you said earlier that if you buying or selling your own real estate, under your own portfolio and stuff, you don't need no license and stuff. So like, what happens if your all the real estate is under a LLC or something like that, and you own the LLC, do you need to have real estate? Real estate agent the license to
The only thing that a license permits you to do that ordinary people can't do is accept compensation for the actions incident to the transfer of real property. So you could actually represent people in real estate transactions, provided you're not getting compensated. The typical case is that you're going to represent third parties and you're going to get paid by commission or some other way. You will get compensated for the effort. But it's not the representation that the law is concerned with. The law is actually concerned with compensation. That's what it's all about, is limiting who can and cannot receive compensation for the activities incident to the transfer of real property. And this is Article 35 of the Arizona State Constitution provides for this, because the attorneys kept trying to shoot it down as the unlawful practice of law.
So you can't have your own website, I can have my own website for my own LLC and stuff. To market my my rentals and I want to sell a house, that kind of stuff.
You could do that, sure. It's like for sale by owner or for rent by owner. You can do that, absolutely. What you can't do is you can't do it for compensation for third parties. Your own compensation, selling your own home, that's completely lawful. All right. Any other questions?
Yeah. So you buy a house,
Right.
All right. But once you sell, are there people coming to you asking to sell their house? So you can sell the house for them, or are you just buying a whole bunch of houses and sitting on it waiting for people to come buy?
I only own one house right now. The one I live in. We used to own two, but we only own one right now. No, we represent buyers and sellers, and we represent them as their agent, as their realtor, to affect the transaction that they're seeking to have done. If buyers want to buy a home, well, this is what Kathy's doing tomorrow, is helping a lady go out and find the house that she will end up buying. And then Kathy will represent her through that transaction, the acquisition, the contract, putting the home under contract, going through the inspections, going through the escrow process, and then closing on escrow, transfer title. And in exchange for that representation, Kathy will get a share of the sales commission on the sale of the home.
How long would that take?
It can happen in 4 days in Arizona. You can actually do it same day lawfully. You can transfer title same day on an all cash transaction. Almost never happens. That if someone were doing an all cash transaction, I would expect it to take at least 4 days just to do the title search and stuff like that. The minimum time it's going to take if there's a loan involved, we did them in 2005, we were doing them in 2 weeks. The lenders were kicking them out really, really fast. Right now, I would say to write a closing in less than 45 days is probably a mistake, because what happened with the lenders is that they fired a zillion people. They just wiped out their underwriting departments, and so now it takes a lot longer to get a file through a lender. And so I wouldn't write a contract in less than 30 days, no matter what, but I would really write it for 45 days, just anticipating that the lender's gonna take a lot of time. That's not really a long time. If you did a house, I dealt with a guy who was coming from Long Island and he was expecting it to take 6 months, and I said, why? He said, the bank. In other states, in states where there are attorneys involved, it can take a lot longer. In Arizona, it's literally, legally, lawfully, can be done all in one day.
I remember buying a house in Savannah. It took me 3 months.
Wow.
And I think in those days, it was before computers and what have you. And I literally think it sat on this gal's desk for a month. I was running a mall there. I was a mall manager, and I remember calling me over. We'd already gone through the process. We're 6 weeks into the process. My family's still back here in Arizona. I was trying to get there to Georgia. She goes, "Well, where are you getting all this money?" I said, work? I transferred $4,000 from my, you know, checking account here to deposit, to start a banking account there, but all my other deposits were my salary. And she was questioning my source of income, right? Didn't think I could afford the house. Any other questions for Greg?
Hold up.
Okay. I didn't hear you, sorry.
Before, don't be quiet, assert yourself.
You're a broker and you sell houses.
Yes.
As an agent, how does being a broker affect you? I mean...
People take me more seriously. I'm amazed at the difference. They do, they take me more seriously. Ordinary people, it doesn't really matter so much, but people in the business, it matters a great deal, and especially down at the department. At the ADRE, to be a designated broker is to be one of the gods.
You've earned your spurs, more or less. It's also the silly letters he has after his name.
I have a lot of designations too. And now, because of Bloodhound Blog, we're nationally famous. We're doing here in Phoenix, we're doing a trade show called Bloodhound Blog Unchained, which will be a conference on social media marketing, training agents from all over the country in how to do this stuff online, how to live in the world of Facebook, for instance.
Aren't you doing a spot for the Republic still?
I do a column. I have a weekly column in the Arizona Republic in the West Valley sectors of the Republic.
I have a student that brought your column in on a regular basis. Yeah. I said, yeah, he used to be a student of mine. He was.
So there's a lot. But being a broker really, really made a huge difference in terms of my standing with the profession, especially because I'm a radical, and nobody in real estate wants to listen to radical ideas. I mean, it's really a very conservative in the bad way, no change. And I don't... conservative in the good way, no taxes, I like that. The conservative in the bad way, I don't really care for, because I want to see change in the business. I want to see something done about dual agency. I'd like to see something done about the broker laws. I would really argue against real estate licensing laws in general. That there's no reason in the world why you know a lot about real estate, know a lot of people who are interested in real estate. Why can't you represent them for money without having to go through all this rigmarole? It doesn't make any sense to me. And if you commit fraud or you commit some kind of tortious offense, then the courts are still there. I mean, that's what civil court is for. So we have this, the reason for this license, as far as I'm concerned, is to create a sinecure for brokers. Sinecure, you know, without care. A job where you get paid without having to do anything.
It's called a license to steal, right?
But that's my attitude. And well, I'm not that kind of broker, but I do think that that's what the broker law is for, is to create a license to steal. I don't care for it, so.
I've been looking
for
list on foreclosures and tax liens and stuff, but it would be in the state of California. Would I have to contact a real estate agent out there, or is there somewhere on the web that I
can? You can find them on the web. There was a number yesterday, a 417% increase in foreclosures in California month over month. Yeah. The last month, an incredible surge in foreclosures in California, and there are all kinds of resources on the web.
Link on your site?
BiggerPockets.com. Just write it down, BiggerPockets.com. That's an investor website. It's nothing but real estate investors, thousands of them all over the place. But they can point you. You can ask the question, they have a forum there. You can ask the question, where do I find out about foreclosure information in California? They can point you. Go ahead.
Title companies
to find foreclosures. But frankly, at this point, you can go door to door.
Right.
I mean, all you got to do, can you see a vacant house? I don't know if people can or not. I can view a vacant house.
Well, I'm also talking about a part of a certain area in California where there's a lot of apartment buildings that are boarded up, and I'm not sure who owns it, the state owns it. I'm trying to figure out, like, they're condemned or what.
The assessor's office, or go to a title company. If you have a relationship with a title company, they can run a channel to train a title for you.
It would have to be in the state of California, or could it be anywhere?
If you want California real estate, you're going to have to be in California. Or you have the relationship there. You can do it by email by now, but
right.
It would have to be somebody there, because they're not going to have the information here.
Thank you.
I always find that I'm like 2 weeks too late on sensing that vacant house. By the time I know, it's gone somewhere.
But if you're knocking on every door in the neighborhood every 2 weeks,
it's really funny,
then you're there.
Today at lunch, one of my managers was talking about foreclosing on the house that he's in right now.
Well, Carol, what you got to do is develop a relationship with bankers.
Yep.
They will call you.
Say, get this off my inventory.
You're working from the wrong end.
I have one other quick question for you.
Go ahead.
Have you sold this house?
No, actually, this is the listing expired and they did not renew. They broke our hearts. But we loved it, and we thought that it was one of those that was going to go in 5 days, and it didn't.
No, we had an offer in 5 days.
That you're talking about, like that special district, is phenomenal. I mean, how can you not drive through that neighborhood and love it?
This is, yeah, exactly. And this is a big part of our marketing, is knowing that people are going to be going, on Sunday, they're going to be driving through that neighborhood at 15 miles an hour.
This is not Arizona. There's too much grass.
It's a beautiful home, isn't it? Incredible trees. It's the best Warner in story. I don't know. I can't understand why it didn't sell it. Really,
we had an offer in 5 days.
We had an offer in 5 days, and it was a real low-ball offer. And they didn't.
Where's Story
at? Story is, FQ Story straddles the I-10 freeway from 7th Avenue to 15th Avenue. But the part that we work in normally is north of the freeway. Story was where the historic preservation movement in Phoenix came from, because they drove the 10 freeway through there and wiped out two whole blocks of houses. And people suddenly woke up to the fact that there were all these houses built in the 20s and 30s, irreplaceable. We have a very finite supply of these homes. And here we just wiped out two blocks of them by driving the freeway through. And that's where the historic preservation movement started in Phoenix. And so, and then just north of there, from 7th Avenue to Central, north of McDowell, from McDowell to Thomas, is the Willow Historic District, and that's the one that's more famous. It's bigger, more expensive homes. And then just west of that is Encanto Palm Croft, which if you dropped a bomb on Encanto Palm Croft, you would wipe out half the legal profession in Phoenix, just like that. That's where the lawyers live. Big, beautiful Monterey mansion. It's gorgeous. You would never believe that you're in Phoenix. You would never believe there's anything like this in Phoenix. And it's just like a couple of square miles.
There's that big, huge private school there that you drive past and you feel like you're in a completely different region. It's amazing.
What about the country club?
The country club is right over there on the other side of Central. Yeah, but yeah. Right there,
that's the property there.
Cool. Send us email.
Will you keep that website for foreclosures?
Say it again. Oh, biggerpockets.com.
Thank you.
Joshua Dorkin. And if you can't find it, send me an email. Bless you, sir. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Good luck to
you.
Don Ford. Okay, sure. Send me an email. I'm happy to do it. God bless you. Good luck. Thank you.
All right, let's take a 5-minute break.